Next on BYUSN after a week one win, Joey hits the road this week as a 10.5-point underdog against SMU. Is that line disrespectful to the Cougars? BYU TV analyst David Nixon will join us to look back on BYU's win over the Salukis and discuss what a win over SMU would mean for the Cougars season. I go one-on-one with safety Talon Alfrey about what it meant to have Jay Hill at the game Saturday and how the defense performed. And Top 5 Tuesday features the best wins over SMU in football. I think you know what game will get the number one spot. Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. It is Tuesday, September 3rd. I'm Jerem Jordan. Get your popcorn ready because BYU and SMU is going to be shown at some Megaplex theaters. Personally, a huge fan of Megaplex. I love going to the one in Vineyard. It's going to be fun. They're going to show that game in a movie theater. I went to the BYU-Tulsa game in 2007, Spence, in a movie theater at University Mall. The only problem was there were a lot of complaints because BYU ended up losing this game, and it was a touch warm, so it wasn't that fun. It was not that
Turn
fun.
Turn on the air conditioning if you're paying for it. Crank up the AC.
Well, suddenly there were, like, more people than there were seats in there at that point. This is the old University Mall.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't the current, like, Cinemark. It used to be a $3 theater, not a dollar theater, which I kind of miss as a former college student here. That was a fun place to go watch a movie. But anyway, they're going to show it in a movie theater, so that'll be fun.
The one experience I've had watching BYU sports in a movie theater, and you know this, was in San Diego when Jimmer Fredette and BYU were playing at San Diego State.
They showed it in a movie theater in
San
Diego.
They didn't allow or allot hardly any tickets for BYU fans, understandably, at Viejas Arena. So the San Diego alumni group was like, okay, well, we're just going to have a party of our own. They rented out an entire San Diego theater. That's where we watched BYU destroy them on CBS Sports. It was fantastic.
No, Art Sox Charles Boyle was banking in threes from the corner somehow. I mean, that was awesome, man.
Absolutely. Hey, if you get some popcorn, literally get your popcorn ready, as you said, and watch BYU hopefully do something like I did, which is win a big road game when you're a huge underdog.
My ward has a ward barbecue at the same time. What are we doing? I'm not going to that. I got a game to watch. What?
Take your computer, take your phone, stream it.
No.
Hey, go get free food and watch the game.
I have a job. I can buy some food. I'm good.
All right, do whatever you'd like. Just make sure you're watching BYU on Friday night. Also, you should rise and shout. Let's get to what's trending.
Man, am I glad to have that first game under our belt.
Another touchdown pass.
10 different guys caught passes from Jake Retzlaff.
Now going against SMU, it's going to be tough for us to go in there and then play against them.
Remember, BYU operates better as a dog.
Let's hope that rings true. What's trending, presented by BYU Food to Go, the MVP of your next event. Will BYU be better as an underdog once again, where, as you just heard Jerem say, they have thrived in that role so often? The Cougars 1-0 after that convincing win on Saturday night against Southern Illinois. SMU now 2-0. So we're going to discuss a number of different topics by making a statement and then straight up asking, is this a hot take or not? So let's start with this. BYU now a 10.5-point underdog to SMU. It was 11.5 when the line opened up. It slid to 10.5. BYU, that said, should be no more than a 7-point underdog against the Mustangs in Dallas. Hot take or not?
No, I could see anything from 7 to kind of 10 or 11. 10 or 11 feels a little much, but I don't think that Vegas has taken into account what we've seen so far this year very much. Like the Nevada SMU game doesn't seem to be accounted for in this line much. Houston Christian and Southern Illinois, it's kind of a wash. SIU way better than HCU. But, 10.5 feels kind of high, but honestly, anything over one score, like if it was 14, that'd be weird. I also think if it was 6, it'd be a little weird. So I'm not too kind of bugged by it. I actually love it when BYU is kind of a bigger dog than you think. Because, again, like you just heard me say in that clip, BYU always loves being the underdog. Like, it's in our DNA and our culture of, like, we can do hard things when no one thinks we can. And you summon this, like, pioneer spirit, this we're going to go independent. No one, the Pac-12 didn't want us. Oh, now we're in the Big 12. We can do this. I think BYU loves that, like, vibe. And so, if you said, hey, it's 7, I don't think that's hot. Once you get, like, under 7, I'm like, well, the part of this, too, Spence, is SMU last year, they were awesome, man. They won the AAC. They went 11-3. They had a chance of 12 games, lost their bowl game. They averaged 52 a game at home last year. Like, explosive, crazy offense. Have they been that same offense against Nevada? No. Were they against Houston Christian? Yes. I don't take a ton from that game. This is a team that can put up some points in a hurry. They had a scoop and score, a thick six, as they call it, because a defensive lineman went in there. So I see this line, and I go, it's a little weird, but it's not a hot take to go seven. How do you feel?
I feel strongly that BYU should be, at worst, a single-digit underdog. Like maybe 9.
Because SIU performance?
Because why? SMU didn't perform well against Nevada to open up the season. And, yeah, they beat a terrible FCS team at home, which they should. They took out some frustrations I'm sure they were feeling because of their poor performance at Nevada.
Yeah.
But I feel like BYU has earned a little bit better than being a 10.5-point underdog. And maybe that is too blue-goggled because BYU has lost 5 games in a row on the road.
That's wild.
And SMU was... I mean, still in largely in the minds of the general public, SMU is supposed to be a dark horse to potentially win the ACC.
Especially with Florida State losing a second game last night.
It feels wide open.
SMU has the 4th best shot to win the ACC by percentage from ESPN
Analytics.
Which is, I was like, whoa, they made the graphic.
How much does the road situation factor into it for BYU in that it's going to be hot and humid, it's a short week?
Short week.
Does that affect BYU in any way or significantly?
It's not an advantage, that's for sure.
Because SMU's coming off of a short week as well, but they are home. But to your point, it's not an advantage for BYU.
It's not, so how much of a disadvantage is it? It's somewhat.
So typically, home field is worth about 3 points. Now, outside of that, is SMU 7.5 or 8 points better than BYU, even if they're not playing on their home field? They're essentially saying that SMU would win by 7 or 8 on a neutral site.
Based on last year's teams, yeah.
This makes sense.
It might be more, yeah. But it's this year, and it's just a little early.
Yes.
It's a little
early. So I'm feeling strongly that BYU deserves more than that, but maybe that's a little too based in we're very close to this program, and we need to give SMU the benefit of the doubt for not playing well against Nevada. They were on the road.
Right. Yeah, I mean... BYU's lost that game before at Nevada when they flew in day of, but that was weird, right? 0-2. So it not a big deal to me. It's an even line. It's 14. Okay, whatever. Like, go and win this game. Like, what Vegas says is a fun contextual point going into the game, but ultimately, like, go and win this game. Because if BYU covers, but loses, like, who cares?
You want to win the game.
We're not laying down some coin on this. One, it's against NCAA rules. Two, we just aren't doing it.
We just love the context of it.
I love the context
and
of it.
And where experts think that these teams should be.
Experts in lines, yeah.
In a game like
this.
Yeah,
in spreads.
So they have no dog in the fight.
Yeah.
This is just what they think legitimately is going to happen.
And ponies and cats. That's a weird deal.
I feel like BYU deserves a little bit better than this, but hopefully they use it to their advantage. But it's not a hot take to say that it should be a seven-point underdog.
Okay, yesterday, Kleinstocke spoke to the media, said defensive coordinator Jay Hill is going to call the defense against SMU. How about that? So here's the statement. BYU's defense will hold SMU to a season low in points. That would be 28 or fewer. Hot take or not?
This is not a hot take. I think BYU's defense is certainly good enough to hold SMU to 28 or fewer. Mm. It might be 27 or 28. This kind of feels like a game where the first to 24 wins. It's that Bronco Mendenhall rule.
Yeah. Bronco, you dog.
Giving up
60.
This feels like that type
Arizona.
Of game where, like, if you get to 24 first, you got a great chance of winning the game. His thing was, well, our goal is to hold the opponent to 24 or fewer, and obviously the offense to score 24 or more, because that metric over so many years of college football has produced a significantly better percentage winner in those circumstances. So, but this feels like a first to 24 wins. I think BYU's defense is up to the task. I don't think this is a hot take. They can hold SMU to 28 or fewer. If Nevada can hold SMU to 29 and figure out a way, I know, season opener, it was weird, it was on the road. Jay Hill, rally the troops, circle the wagons, compete for the coach. He's back after some personal drama. I don't think this is a hot take. Now, if you were to tell me that BYU was going to hold SMU to 21 or fewer, then, yeah, that's piping hot.
How about 24?
It's tough.
The number.
Yeah, that we're getting there close. Like, ooh, yeah, that is definitely warmer. That starts to border on hot. But 28, no, that is not a hot take. I think this defense is good enough and experienced enough, and they have enough juice and that rallying cry around Jay Hill that they can do this. And if they do it, they'll win the game. If they hold SMU to a season low, don't you feel like BYU is in great position to win the game?
28 itself, yeah.
SMU had a great defense last year.
And they got a bunch of P5 transfers on the D-line, which is interesting. Okay, last year, how many times did BYU score 28-plus against Power 5 competition? Arkansas, Cincinnati, there's your two wins. And then
Oklahoma State
in a loss. So it wasn't very often. That's tough. Then you look at SMU, again, last year. It's early this year, so let's look at last year. How many times did SMU score 28-plus last year against, let's say, Power 5 competition? Did not against Oklahoma, lost. Did not against TCU, lost. Let's see. Did not against Tulane, but won in the AAC. Well, that wasn't P4. And then against Boston College, they didn't. They lost. So if BYU sub 20, I think we found a number here. If BYU, you know, holds them under 28, they
great
got a
chance to
they
win
got
the
a
game.
Good chance. They got a good chance. Is it a hot take or not that they will score 20? It's hot-ish, given that last year at home they averaged 52 a game, and they just put up 59 on an FCS team.
But against what competition?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, BYU's been in it a year. They're not, like, vastly more experienced as a P4 than SMU. They went one more year. Is that year worth a certain amount of points? I don't know. I think it's more about – it's less about kind of history, and it's more about matchups, right? Does BYU match up well enough to hold Preston Stone, in his past game?
And RJ Maryland. And
RJ Maryland's legit. And then Jennings is legit. So Jennings is a smaller quarterback. He's 6 foot, 189. He can run, dude. If you watch the Houston Baptist game and Nevada, Houston Christian, oh my gosh, this dude can dance. Like, he is fleet of foot. So that's going to be a challenge because DJ Williams ran wild against BYU at times on Saturday. So that is the question. If BYU can contain the run game, which it was only 2.9 yards per carry, by the way, against Nevada, if you can do that, you win in the game.
Yes. Just don't let SMU reach 30, and you have a great shot to win that game in Dallas. They'll score some points.
I feel that.
It's not B9. They're going to score points.
I feel that way for most games. Like, if you say, okay, BYU held the opponent sub 30, did BYU win the game? I'd say, it's better than not. Sometimes you're going to have to shoot out in the Big 12, but BYU's never lost to SMU, by the way, ever. 4-0.
Let's make it
5-0. Some real dramatic wins, which, by the way, our top five's coming up. How are we going to fit 4 and 5? You'll see.
Yeah. On to the next hot take or not. BYU's win projection, by the way, according to the ESPN Football Power Index, jumped from 4.3 wins to 5.2.
Yay!
After beating Southern Illinois. Went up 0.9.
Oh, boy.
Because the metrics look a little better for BYU after their season-opening victory.
0.9.
So we can assume, right?
Yay.
If BYU beats SMU, their FPI win total will jump over 6. If you add 0.9, then it would be 6.1. Is that a hot take or not?
Why is this a question? I'm talking about 0.9 wins. Yes, of course. No, it's not. It's not a hot take. They will get over 6. Great.
If BYU beats SMU, is it safe to assume that the metrics will say BYU is a bowl
projected
team?
Projected for...
They're a bowl team.
That they will win 4 of the next 10? Yeah, I think so.
Now you've got a real... And we'll get into this later in the week. If BYU beats SMU, no, this is not a hot take to assume that their FPI will jump above 6.
Come on.
You know why? Because, amazingly, this is listed on the FPI site. The second most difficult game remaining for BYU. They're given just a 21% chance to win this game. BYU's given a 23% chance at Utah. You're telling me that the numbers say BYU has a better chance to beat Utah in Salt Lake City than they do
at
to
UCF.
Win in Dallas at SMU? And then UCF, 17.6%. This crazy numbers. And I know this is all just mathematical formulas.
This is the nerdiest graphic we're going to show.
This isn't someone saying, like, well, I just don't like BYU, so I'm going to give them a low chance. This is all based on math and metrics. But it is weird. It's strange to me that BYU has a worse chance to win at SMU than they do at Utah right now.
It's weird.
So if they do win this game, Jeremy, their projected win total might jump to 6.5 because the metrics say that BYU's got a very small chance to win this game on Friday.
This is all pathetic, so it's annoying. Yay, 6.5. Like,
not a hot take.
What? Who cares? Yeah. Okay, Jaren Hall signs with my Seahawks. I wanted this so bad and it happened. I'm so happy for Jaren.
You spoke it into existence.
Yes, I did. I manifested it, as they say. Jaren has a better long-term future in Seattle than he did in Minnesota. Hot take or not?
This is not a hot take because clearly Minnesota did not want him.
They wanted Brett Rippon instead.
And Seattle sought him out. So, yes, using pure logic, this makes total sense. Not a hot take. He does have a better long-term future in the Pacific Northwest because Minnesota had their chance to keep him there when he was playing his best football for them. And they said, nah, we're going to pass on you and go to get Brett Rippon. Seattle likes him.
Yeah.
He's going to wear number 15. Seneca Wallace vibes. Let's go. I like that Jaren has another shot.
Seneca Wallace. Good pull.
And I think that he's,
Iowa State.
I mean, he should feel confident because, again, like there are, you wonder after Minnesota cut him, like, does anybody want me? Seattle wants him. They bought into the film that they saw. They saw that he was playing well in the preseason. He looked great. They want him. They're investing in him. Let's go get it.
He's the second BYU quarterback to be the practice squad guy with Seahawks. The other would be Jake Heaps.
That's right.
Early in his career after the Jets.
I wonder if there are any tieovers still in that entire organization.
From
the Jake Heaps days to now where they are with Jaren Hall. I doubt it. I mean, I bet there's been a lot of turnover as far as staff goes.
I mean, it was Pete Carroll until Mike McDonald came from the Ravens. So, I obviously, as a Seahawks fan, I know the situation there. Geno Smith is under contract through this and next year. He's not a long-term thing. They're still kind of feeling it out with Geno, right? Been good enough. If they have a really good year this year, who knows? Maybe they re-up and you sit out or whatever. And then Sam Howell's the backup. That was in a trade with the Commanders. He was kind of running the show in preseason. So Jaren's QB3. He could be elevated to the 53 if they want to carry three quarterbacks on game day. So that would be good news for him as well. He's at least going to be in the practice squad there. So we'll see what opportunities he has like to actually play in the games. It's going to take something for him to get there. But I like that Seattle sought him out and signed him because when they put out the practice squad, there was no quarterback there. And I thought, once Jaren got released, I was like, there's a chance
they only have two quarterbacks.
With the Seahawks, that he could be QB3. So I'm excited for him. And let's see what happens, man. I already have a number 3 Seattle jersey. I would just have to scratch out the Wilson on the back.
He's in a great position there. Just
I'm excited.
Based on the numbers and how many quarterbacks are in the room. So you go from Minnesota where J.J. McCarthy's injured, and then they brought in Brett Rippon, and Jaren was the 5th quarterback, if you include McCarthy, who is unfortunately out for the year.
Sam Darnold, Nick Mullins, Brett Rippon now.
Way too crowded. This is awesome for Jaren.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the future looks way better for him in Seattle.
I don't see him playing in a game this year, if at all, given the depth. You'd have to have some real injuries there. But if Jaren Hall, like I've just envisioned this for a long time, him being in a Seahawks jersey, and it's just exciting.
It's happening. It's out. BYU quarterback in Seattle.
He's going to wear number 15, by the way.
All right, let's go up tempo. BYU women's volleyball, number 14 in the ABCA poll. They jumped 2 spots. Right now, Jeremy, you watched them in their opening matches. 3-0, they were impressive. Is BYU a top 14 team in the country at this moment?
They're probably a little high for me, given how young they are. But the program, like women's soccer, gets a lot of respect. So they're number 14.
They've earned it.
Yeah, they got a true freshman center in Alex Bauer, Whitney's younger sister, Eden's younger sister. And then Ellie Mortensen, by the way. Nina Puikkanen, her mom, is an all-time great at BYU. She looked like she had played for 3 years at BYU. She was awesome. Had 17 kills Saturday night. She had 4 aces in a match. She was awesome. Claire Little was a sophomore. Combining with Ellie as your 1-2 punch there. Looked pretty good. Brielle Kemivore in the middle, by the way, got the start. Mia Lee coming off the bench, so that was a mix up there. Sherstie Strong in the middle from St. Mary. So it's a new-look starting lineup, but they're pretty good. We're really going to see this week how good they are. Lipscomb coming in, but Georgia Tech
is the
top
team.
20.
Yes.
Saturday night, we'll get a sense of how good BYU is Saturday.
Yeah, they'll earn that number 14 ranking if they can beat Georgia Tech for sure.
Yep. Okay, will women's soccer drop out of the top 25 in today's poll after 2 losses last week at number 3 UCLA and then 2-1 to number 19 Utah State?
I hope that they don't fall 10 spots for losing to a top 5 team in UCLA and then playing Utah State tough. Utah State's undefeated. They're also ranked.
They've given up 1 goal a year.
So I would think that BYU could survive because they still have a ranked win over St. Louis.
And Wisconsin. Well, tie with
tie. But
two results.
They have 2 non-losses.
Two results.
Against 2 ranked teams. 2 results against 2 ranked teams.
Yep.
I think that should be enough to keep him maybe at number 25. But again,
there's no
you've been saying there are eight voters.
There's only eight voters. Yeah.
Eight voters in the poll. They're going to say, oh, they lost to Utah State at home and they lost to UCLA. Get them out.
If half of them, if four people think they don't, they're going to be out. So there's not enough voters. I think they'll be out. Which may be okay for this team.
I'm hoping they stay in at 24 or 25.
I don't think they need that pressure of that ranking right now. They're trying to figure out goals. Allie Fryer's out with a concussion right now. Aaron Bailey's sick. Yeah. They have things to figure out. That a ranking is nice, but like just go and figure out how to.
How much of it is based on body of work, and how much of it is the eight voters just going, "What happened this week? Oh, they lost UCLA and USC. Okay, they're not ranked."
That's the basis of voting. Let's be honest.
Are they really in depth? Are they going body of work there?
No.
Yeah.
There's only eight of them. And when it's coaches poll, typically it's SIDs. In football, at least.
Well, speaking of body of work, we need you to assess BYU football's body of work as you answer our question of the day. And it's not a ton because it's only one win against an FCS foe. But has BYU earned the right to be better than a 10.5-point underdog against SMU?
This is such a Tuesday question. I love it.
At Mathman Hale on X says, yeah. I think it's more SMU has shown they shouldn't be that much of a favorite, to be honest.
Based on this season alone.
Because of Nevada.
Have to take last year into account this early in the season. We don't have as many games to assess. I see what you're saying, but this team was awesome last year.
Did SMU play their worst game of the season against Nevada? Maybe.
They might have.
And it was a season opener. It was a road game.
They did not look super impressive, and then they stormed back and had a great show.
Maybe it was their wake-up call, and maybe they will become what we all thought they were going to be.
They are who we thought they were. Which
is a dark horse to compete for an ACC title.
They might have the best tight end in the country with RJ Maryland, by the way. Pass catching. Dude is legit.
It's
Russell Maryland's son. Russell Maryland, part of that Miami team that lost BYU in 1990.
So what makes this so fun, because if SMU beats BYU and they're 3-0, then they gain some real steam and momentum going into conference play that they could do what people think they are, and that is compete for an ACC title.
They're playing like four home games in a row in the ACC.
But if BYU wins this game, now we get into the whole trajectory of what is possible?
Oh, shit.
What is possible? We got three more days to talk about this before BYU actually kicks off, and we'll get into that subject for sure. Hashtag BYUS on an X, Facebook, and Instagram.
We've got time. If you missed yesterday's Coordinator's Corner, Aaron Roderick and Kelly Papinga were in the house. You can watch it on demand on BYUSN.com or the free BYU TV app. Again, this is one of the more underrated programs in the country. There's not a lot of other shows where you hear from the coordinators. Great insight.
After the break, Jerem goes one-on-one with BYU safety Talon Alfrey on what he liked about BYU's defensive performance in the week one win over Southern Illinois and what it meant to him to have Jay Hill back in the booth and at that game. This is BYUSN.
This segment of BYU Sports Nation presented by BYU Food to Go, the MVP of your next event.
Jay's been getting these guys prepped. He's been getting them ready for this. And he's a good step on where we want to be as a defense overall.
Nealon is tackled short of the line to gain. Tanner Wall makes the tackle. Big John brings him down. Season number 9 begins just fine.
We are live in Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I'm Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan. It's that time of year where we get to talk to guys just about every day on this BYU football team. Love. And yesterday you had the opportunity to talk with a guy from one of the deepest position groups on the entire team.
And a lot of safeties played in this game. Certainly without Jay Hill, it was a little different. Gavin Fowler was coaching this group. But Talon Alfrey is a guy who's very experienced, one of the starters for BYU. Had strong safety, played a lot. A lot of guys played too. I spoke with him about BYU's performance, Jay Hill, SMU, and much more. Talon, game one in the books. Nice performance from the defense. How'd you feel about it?
Yeah. Like you said, defense played really well. Obviously, there's always things to clean up. And one of the things, QB running game, we had to do better on that, defending that. But I think just as a whole defense, there's a couple plays here and there that we wish we – some big plays that we wish we could get back. But ultimately, we executed the game plan, got pressure on the quarterback, which was good to see. We had good coverage, which helped with that. Pretty good performance by defense overall. Super excited.
There's a lot of strong safeties that played in this game. How would you evaluate kind of your group and what you guys did?
Yeah, there's lots of us in the safety room that played, and I think everyone played well. Contributed when they got their opportunities. There's a quote that says, don't count the reps, make the reps count. And so everyone, when they got their opportunity, to make the most of it. Obviously, there's things we can all clean up individually and as a safety room and as a whole. But yeah, like you said, lots of safeties, lots of experience, trying to just lead that defense and make plays.
Tell me about the helmet comms on defense, because the offense can huddle and talk about it, but defensively, you guys kind of stay in your position. One guy's getting those comms. What kind of difference is that making? Are you still looking to the sideline for signals?
Yeah. Yep. It's kind of a mix of both. You know, you have the coach to player communications, which is super helpful. Then you also can also have the signs on the signals on the sideline, and the variety of different, you know, options we have with that. Helps just to keep things kind of in the unknown for the offense. If there's any chance of signal stealing during the game, but super, super grateful for that technology. The linebackers have that on the defense, or the one linebacker has it. And so as a safety, we don't have it. So it's not much different for us. We're still having to get the call, whether from the player or from the sideline, and then execute our assignment. But yeah, it's super cool technology.
Okay, so on the sideline, you have the tablets, and I've talked to multiple players now that have said, listen, I didn't have to re-watch the game as much as I did before because I did during the game. How was that for you?
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty similar experience. or we're just re-watching it yesterday, you know. Yep. But after a play, you had a question of, you know, did I drop off the right person? Did I, you know, cover my man well enough? Did I get the run pass read correct from the O-line? Did I see three step correctly? Did I see the screen? Just all those type of things is really nice to see right away on the tablet. And so then you can fix it in game instead of having to delay that improvement a week or so.
Is it awesome when you make a great play and then if you don't make a great play, you're like, no, I'm good. I don't need to look at it.
Yeah, it can go both ways. Yeah, most times when if you don't make a play, you want to see why you didn't. And so you still want to watch it. But, I don't know. I don't know if there's many people watching. I guess, yeah, there's, you know, make a play, they go watch, see how the technique actually worked effectively and how it, you know, helped them make the play. So, yeah, it's both ways, though, watching it no matter what.
Walk me through Thursday. And preparing, and then Jay Hill has a heart attack. Like, what did you guys know? What were you feeling at the time?
Yeah, so we came in Friday to our team meeting not knowing anything. I sit in the same row as Coach Hill, so I noticed he wasn't there. Sometimes he'd be just still preparing, finishing up the final notes for the defensive meeting or safety meeting. So I didn't think much of it. Then Coach Kalani got up and kind of presented the idea that Coach Hill was going to speak to us, and he was going to be the one to share what had happened. And so he like respected Coach Hill and let him kind of share over FaceTime from the hospital bed what happened. And it was pretty shocking. And like we kind of were blindsided by it. No one really expected that to happen. But Coach Hill was in good spirits and super, you know, hopeful about how things were going for him on his end. And then he was trying to just the man he is, didn't want things to be about him. He wanted it to be about us players playing the game. And so he asked us to, you know, keep it quiet. Don't make a big deal. He didn't want to be the center of attention, but obviously he was there on Saturday, which was super cool to see him on the field before the game. Still in good spirits, a little like emotional, obviously, because he can't fulfill or can't be with us the way he wants to be completely, but he was still able to be there and be part of the defense in some way. And that was cool to see.
What was that like emotionally? Because suddenly you're like, wait, he had a heart attack? Like he's had this crazy experience. And then who's calling? Then there's the logistics, right? After you get the human side of that. But then he shows up on the field. Did you guys think he'd be at the stadium? Probably not, I'm assuming.
I mean, after having surgery and, you know, two surgeries, I didn't expect him to be there. I think a lot of guys were on the same page, but so it was really cool to see him there. We obviously trust him to have prepared us and his staff well enough to call the game how he wanted it to be called. And so we were pretty confident in the coaches and him and so emotionally that way, in that sense, it didn't really bother us too much. We were pretty confident and ready to go still. But which is a testament to his coaching style and the preparation he helped us achieve before the game.
You've called Gavin Fowler Coach Hill 2.0. He took over for the safeties as an analyst. How would you evaluate, you know, how Gavin helped you guys in his first kind of full safety coach stint right there?
Yeah, Coach Gavin's great. He, like with the iPad, the tablets, you know, he was helping us go through the plays. He was asking if we were seeing anything, you know, tricky, confusing. He was helping communicate, you know, what Coach Hill was talking about through the headset to us. So yeah, he did well. And last year, Coach Gavin was up in the box in the booth. And so this year he's down on the field with us, which is cool and fun. And yeah, I have a good relationship with Coach Fowler. He actually hosted me on my official visit a few years back. So we go way back, and but it's fun to see him grow as a coach and continue to improve and help us play well as a safety room.
Let's talk about SMU. You played against them a couple of years ago in the New Mexico Bowl, a dramatic 2-point stop, right? Which was right at the goal line. Now it's a team that's a power four team like BYU and a team that can sling it. They have two quarterbacks now and they can run. How are you feeling about the matchup with the Mustangs?
Yeah, we're excited. Yeah, we know kind of similar offense, but they're running a couple of years ago still. And having two quarterbacks is fun to kind of game plan for. And it's still the same offense coordinator, though, when it's a different quarterback. So play calling's pretty similar. Like you said, they'll sling it. They can run it too. They have great athletes. They're a Power 4 program, and they're excited to prove that to people and against another Power 4 program. So we're excited for that challenge and excited to go down there and have a good game against them.
Well, Talon, best of luck. All the BYU Sports Nation karma I can give you. Go get a win Friday in Dallas against SMU. Thanks for the time, man.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good one.
John Alfrey. He's out, baby. Tune in to BYU Football with Kalani Sitake tonight as Greg Rebell sits down with head coach and quarterback Jake Retzlaff to recap week one win over Southern Illinois. Ask Jake how long that ball was in the air and if it came down to snow on it to JoJo Phillips. Look ahead to Friday night's game against SMU tonight, 8:30 Eastern on the BYU TV app.
Speaking of Coach Sitake, what are his initial thoughts on preparing to play SMU? And he gives an update on defensive coordinator Jay Hill and his specific responsibilities on Friday night. This is BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Follow BYU Sports Nation on social for content throughout the day. Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. We're honoring the 100th season of BYU football and remembering the good times by looking back on certain accomplishments, big wins. And on this date in BYU football history, what happened, Jerem?
BYU opened the Kalani Sitake era in 2016 at the University of Phoenix Stadium at the time, now State Farm Stadium, with Kalani Sitake's first game. Taysom Hill starting a quarterback. BYU jumped out 9-0. Braden L. Backery, 1-yard touchdown.
Oh, a little push up front right there. Then Taysom Hill connected with Colby Pearson for a 6-yard touchdown, giving BYU a 12-point lead in the third quarter, but the Wildcats then rally to take a 16-15 lead until Jake Oldroyd gives it right back to BYU. The green cleats give Kalani Sitake his first ever win as BYU Cougar coach, 18-16 in front of 30,000 fans, BYU fans in that stadium. Amazing.
Let's get awesome.
That was a great day. It was outstanding. Let's get to today's headlines.
Head coach Kalani Sitake spoke to the media about the challenge that lays ahead of BYU on Friday in Dallas.
It's going to be tough for us to go in there and then play against them, but we have to get some things fixed in order for us to be at our best. So I know they have a really explosive team and are favored in this game. So, you know, this is an opportunity for our guys to get in there and figure out ways to get better and improve and then, you know, take on a very impressive SMU team.
Kalani is aware that BYU is an underdog.
He
said it.
Dog right now.
They're a favorite. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Kalani Sitake gave an update on BYU defensive coordinator Jay Hill following his heart attack last week, including what his availability will be and the role he will take for Friday night's game in Dallas.
Jay's doing great. You know, we're off and working and getting ready for SMU. I anticipate him returning to his role, his role as D coordinator, and doing his part. But I don't know if he'll be on the field or if he'll be in the box.
Coach Satake also added that BYU remained relatively healthy after the Southern Illinois game with no season-ending injuries, and that they will have Darius Lassiter back in the lineup on Friday night at wide receiver.
I'll be surprised if Jay Hill's on the field, frankly. From an energy and emotional standpoint, in the box, you're kind of removed from the emotion of the game a bit. He's been on the field for a long time, though, as a head coach, as the
DC
BYU.
Give him some more time and space.
Right, whatever he needs. Ultimately, his choice, but I'll be surprised if he's not in the box.
Sure.
Quarterback Jake Retzlaff got his first win as BYU starting quarterback on Saturday night. Passed for a career-high 348, three touchdowns. Here's what he told the media about it yesterday.
Pretty good. We executed pretty well. No turnovers is always a huge plus. That's a big emphasis always. And, you know, there's a few throws that I definitely want back. A couple decisions I can make better, but that's for next week.
That soundbite was 12 seconds long for number 12. How about that? Production team, incredible. Jake was given a 90.0 PFF grade for his week one performance. Fifth best among quarterbacks in the Big 12. Because you know that means something to him, given that he has a screenshot of number 16 from the PFF opinion
for
the season.
Uh-huh. Former BYU quarterback Jaren Hall has signed with the Seattle Seahawks practice squad.
Seahawks! Thank you. Nice, dude.
You're welcome.
Thanks, bro.
That was for you. Hall spent last season with the Minnesota Vikings, starting in two games. The Vikings waived Hall a week ago after signing Brett Rypien. Now Jaren finds himself in the Pacific Northwest, joining Geno Smith and Sam Howell in that quarterback room.
Robbie McCombs, the Vancouver foe, is helping Jaren's in his same ward. I know that's been a goal of his. Women's volleyball jumped up two spots to number 14 in the ABCA poll, went 3-0 last week in the doTERRA Classic. Up next, BYU hosts the BYU Nike Invitational, beginning with the match Thursday against Lipscomb out of Nashville.
After the break, former BYU and NFL linebacker David Nixon joins us in Studio B to discuss the Cougars' week one triumph, how much you take from that, and does he feel like BYU deserves to be better than a 10.5-point underdog? This is BYUSN. Oh, the vibes are still winning at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. That is a live look at that gorgeous backdrop, Y Mountain.
Is that Blaine running up the stage? No, that's not. Okay, never mind.
No, Blaine and Gavin have already finished.
That's next week.
We welcome you back to Studio B. We moved over to the Cougar Council Room to welcome in former BYU and NFL linebacker and one of our close compadres, David Nixon, is back on BYU Sports Nation. D. Nix, welcome back to the show.
Hey, I love seeing you guys. You know it's football season when I see you now more than
we
like once every
every
few
week.
Months. Yes.
We
multiple times a week.
Yes.
I like this. It feels good. I feel at home.
I know. There's the part of the year where we forget the football isn't there, and then when it comes back, I'm like, oh, I'm way happier. When football season
brings more joy into my life.
It's the celestial part of the year. It really is. Okay, BYU had a nice performance on Saturday. What did you love about that win?
I honestly, if you look at offensively, I love the way that they were able to move the ball, frankly. I love that they put up points. You go back to Sam Houston State last year, and they only put up 14 points. And the fact that BYU took care of business in that regard, yards-wise, over 527. Mm-hmm. And so they moved the ball well. For me, that's what you want to see in those type of games, is you don't want to see them sputter out and struggle to have three and outs. They didn't have one three and out the entire game, by the way, which is a huge plus. And so they were able to sustain drives, move the ball, and get in some type of continuity. That's what I love from the offense. Defensively, I love the way they perform. I love the way it's tough to run. Yes, the quarterback had over 100 yards rushing, which is a big no-no. But also it's tough to go scout an FCS team knowing the quarterback was a transfer in and kind of have a game plan to spy him and be ready for that type of run.
They couldn't watch Murray State film from last year?
It's just you can, but I don't think it's something. It's not something you're spending a lot of your time on, right? You're just kind of getting ready for the offense as a whole. And so I don't think they had a specific game plan to stop the quarterback.
They better this week.
Well, they better this week as well as moving forward. Teams are not going to see that, okay, the rush lanes are open for BYU's defense to try to take advantage of the quarterback run. So they're going to have to be ready for it. But I think this last week they stuffed the run. Besides the quarterback run, they held him to like 5 yards rushing total.
Yes, but that quarterback had 100. I can't say besides on that one.
I agree. It's not something that I'm thrilled about.
Right.
But also he was a fantastic athlete. I mean, they're going to get yards, but I'm glad that the running backs, when it was a design running play, BYU was in their gaps. They stuffed the run and they did what they're supposed to do.
So you can add to that, you're saying. Okay, now you add the quarterback spy.
That's right. Now you scheme it up and you understand the DNs have to stay outside. You got to contain them. And then, of course, you got to funnel back into your backers in the middle. And then when you drop, maybe now you don't go 8 yards, you only go 6. Or you don't go 15, you go 12.
This is a taste of AFR tonight, by the way.
There you go.
The schematic breakdown.
We will talk about all this on AFR and what they do moving forward, because you have to be ready for it. Like I said, teams will scheme you up knowing that you're susceptible to the quarterback run. And so you got to be aware of it. And Jay Hill and defensive staff will be ready to when they do face a running quarterback, to be able to contain him.
It's Kevin Jennings, he's 6 foot 189, as I mentioned. This dude is fleet of foot. He can dance. But to your point, the offense was really good. We've been excited about, despite the fact that it was the same number of points against an FCS team as last year, it was very different in how BYU moved the ball. I like the three and out stat. The explosiveness was good in the pass game especially. Run game, still want a little more there.
Yeah, 8 explosive plays, which means 15-plus yards or more, and that's what BYU had in that game.
250s.
Exactly, 4 in each quarter. I do love the fact that, and this was something everyone kind of worried about, was Jake Ratzlaff going to be on the same page with the receivers? And it felt like he was. There were a couple of plays where I think he wished he could have taken back a throw. He kind of was rolling out to his right, and he threw back across and kind of short-hopped
it. Ethan Erickson in the end zone.
A couple overthrows, but all in all, it felt like he was on target. And it felt like the receivers were in the right spots. They're in the right windows. They're sitting down in zones. They're supposed to sit in zones. And then, of course, you know, Chase Roberts, after he catches those balls, the way he's able to maneuver his body and give a little shimmy inside and
cut back outside.
I mean, that kid's going to be special this year. And we talked about on the pregame show and the postgame show, you've got to have a dog. You got to have a guy that is your go-to guy. I mean, Puka Nacua was that a couple years ago, right? Now, who's that guy going to be? I think it's Chase, but it also might be by committee. I mean, you get back Lassiter, which I think was, you know, it was tough having him gone. He's a big, deep threat, speedy guy outside that can go track the ball and high point it. So I think having all that back, or having him back and bringing all that back from this first game, there's a lot of momentum. There's a lot of confidence you can take away from that game to ride on. And listen, like, you don't take those games for granted in the sense that there's teams that struggle against FCS and you start to put doubt in your mind, and there's teams that lose to them. I mean, look at Colorado, almost lost to North Dakota State.
Granted, Texas Tech had to go to OT.
Exactly. Yeah, there's teams that are struggling out there, and BYU took care of business. And so I think if you're a BYU fan today, as you wake up, knowing that you got SMU this week, you're feeling pretty confident rolling into SMU because you took care of business.
BYU is a 10.5-point underdog, and we know that Las Vegas is a business, and they want to create context, and like it's not a personal thing. It's not like they have a dog in the fight, but I sit here and think, wow, is that really how BYU is perceived by the experts who don't really care about feelings? They're a 10.5-point underdog. Has SMU earned the right to be that? How do you view that line? Because to me, it feels too high.
Yeah, I mean, I might be my words come next week at this time, but I don't think SMU is as strong as they thought going into the season. I mean, you look at that Nevada game, they had to come 3 minutes left, they had to go down and have a winning score drive. And so they struggled a little bit on that last drive against Nevada. Obviously, they took care of business this past week. But I think this is a much tighter game than what Vegas is put the line out there for. And I think BYU has a really strong chance with what they're able to carry into this game, the confidence they have of going in there and pulling an upset. I mean, I've said this all along the offseason. For me, it's tough because experience is a big thing in college football. And when you look at BYU's two deep and the amount of kids that played last year and have played in years prior, once again, starters, Micah Harper and others that went out of injuries because of injuries, but are back. And then the kids that had to replace them while they were out with injuries got significant playing time. So when you couple all that together, that experience is huge. And these aren't little freshmen out there running around. BYU's pretty, they've got a lot of experience on their end. So for me, that's what going on the road. On the road tends to shake people a little bit, especially newcomers. No one would expect, eyes wide open, right? Deer in headlights type syndrome. BYU, I don't think, has that in this case. I think they realize they got to go there and take care of business. With that being said, I've been on the record for the last 4 weeks on AFR saying this, for me, is the biggest game of the year for BYU. Not because it's the second game, but I circled this one because I think that this one is your swing game. If BYU wins this one, they have a lot of momentum going into the rest of the season. I think they go up to Wyoming, take care of business, and then they start conference play. If they lose this one, then that doubt starts to creep back in their mind, and they start doubt and say, maybe we are a 4.5 loss team, right? That's what Vegas put us as far as win totals. Maybe we're only a 3-win type team. So this, for me, is a huge game for BYU to go in there and you know, once again, with FPI staying 21% win percentage, in theory, you're stealing this game if you win this one. And I think that's exactly what BYU has to have, the mentality to go in there and quote-unquote steal this game.
When you're going for 6-plus wins, we think 7, there's a couple games that really swing the season, whether it's going to be 5 or 6 wins, or are you pushing 7 or 8? Obviously, you need to win this one to feel like we're going to get to 7 or 8 wins with BYU this year. I do want to ask you about some of the guys in the NFL. The topic du jour is Jaren Hall going to the Seahawks, which I'm excited about. QB3 at this point, but someone who wants him. Vikings draft him. They cut him for Brett Rypien. What do you think of the fit with the Seahawks and Jaren in the NFL?
Listen, at this point in your career, especially as early on, all about it is finding a team. And if it's practice squad, obviously you want to be on the roster. But if you can just be on a team, and the hope we always said that you just want to get recycled. It's all about getting on a team and staying and getting recycled. Because once you have, you know, a season or two underneath your belt, teams do tend to like recycle you and pick you up and bring you on the practice squad and up on the roster, and you just stay in the game. But if you get washed out in that first year and even in that into that second year, it's a problem. It's really tough to make it back in. So the fact that he's got picked up already is a big sign. And I think, listen, teams will love his leadership. They'll love his skills and what he brings to the team. And I think that will grow on these teams, and eventually he'll make his way up that depth chart. And as we know, the NFL game is a brutal game. Quarterbacks, I mean, he got knocked out last year, right? I mean, yep. It's tough to stay healthy throughout the entire season. Look at Aaron Rodgers, right? I mean, there's just it's a brutal game. So he'll be ready, and I'm excited. I think it's a great opportunity for him. But more important, just finding a team and being on a team. That's, you know, you just want to stay in the game, basically, at this point.
He's one of three former BYU Cougars now on current practice squads, joining Keaton Slovis and Max Tooley, who are both with the Houston Texans. Hey, you know a thing or two about being on the practice squad of the Houston Texans, right? Get on that roster. What's life like on the practice squad as one of those guys?
Yeah, well, it's not as bad as you think it is, first of all.
And they've expanded the numbers.
They expanded it, yeah. And when I played, there was, I think, eight of us. Now I think it's
16. Unless you have an international player.
And a lot of that was because of COVID. They needed a bigger practice squad because guys were going out with COVID. And I think they realized this actually works pretty well. You get good scout teams, if you will, right? And so they kept it at 16. But it's not terrible in the sense that you only practice like 3 days a week. And then it depends on what team you are. When I was on the practice squad with the Raiders, we travel with the team, which kind of is a bummer. I mean, it's fun, but you're not getting paid to travel. And so it's kind of like I'd rather just hang out at home. But you travel. Some you travel. Otherwise, you kind of have the weekend off. But you don't get paid as much. And listen, at the end of the day, you're all competitors. You want to play. Yeah. You want to be on the field, right? But it's a great way to kind of earn your stripes and work your way up. And they, listen, I say probably 90% of the time when injury goes down, they elevate a practice squad guy. They don't bring in somebody new. They take somebody from their practice squad, especially now because practice squad, you can have veterans on there. Back in my day, you didn't qualify for practice squad if you had like three or four years plus. Mm. You couldn't be on the practice squad, but now almost anybody can. And so it's kind of like a farm league that you can kind of grow people into it. Mm. Those guys, it's just, once again, it's just finding a spot. And yeah, it's unfortunate. You want to be on the 53-man roster. But knowing that, once again, it's a brutal game. If you're Max Tooley, linebackers go down all the time. People tweak hamstrings. They're out for 2 weeks. They got to bring somebody up, right? And now that means they got to cut somebody else and take them back down the practice squad. It's just a numbers game that just every week in and week out, you're never sure what's going to happen. But that's why you just got to be ready. You got to be prepared. And the coaching staffs typically do a good job of making sure you're ready because they know that literally any given week you could be up on the roster and all of a sudden you're thrusted into starting. I mean, just like that. So you got to be ready. You got to be prepared. It's your job. That's when you get to this level, it's your job. You better be ready.
Great stuff from David Nixon, BYU-SMU, the most critical game on the schedule remaining.
Can't wait for it. If you like that analysis, just wait for a full hour with Blaine Fowler and Dave, if they let them talk, coming up at 7 Eastern on the BYU TV app on After Further Review tonight.
And up next, we wrap up today's show with a special Rise and shout out and the elite voice of the day. This is BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back with our question of the day. Has BYU earned the right to be better?
To party!
They have earned the right to do that.
Ain't
to
no
be
party
better
like
than a 10.5-point underdog against SMU. I know the verbiage is weird because Vegas, it's about business, but still.
Business.
See, our elite voice today presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated comes from Braden_Pack on Instagram, who says, yes, 10.5 seems high. Mm. Offense and defense both looked good against Southern Illinois.
They should against Southern Illinois, so it's hard. But so did SMU against Houston Christian.
You tell us. Answer the question. #BYUSN. Today's Rise and Shout Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
Okay, Jake Retzlaff talked about how his dad was wearing some Riverside Community College swag. Here's what he said yesterday at the game.
We got to get him a shirt to wear because he can't be wearing that RCC shirt at the games anymore, which I know he got flamed for on Twitter.
Jake's
Steve.
Dad.
Hey, Steve!
Jake's dad, Steve. We got you.
We got something for you, man.
We got something for you.
We'll hook it up.
We got you.
We can get that guy into some blue, some royal.
It got
Navy,
blamed
some
on
white, whatever. The BYU shirt.
We got you. Don't worry.
Great stuff. Our thanks to today's guest, BYU safety Talon Alfrey, and former NFL linebacker, BYU great David Nixon.
Sorry to Dennis Pitta. No time. Have we ever given Dennis BYU Sports Nation something? I think so, right? He was on game day.
I believe he's gotten something.
Yeah, he probably had something.
For Jerem, I am Spencer. Shout out to Spencer Hadley, AFR, and BYU football with Kalani Sitake tonight. Go Cougs!